Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Adam McManus, host from theworldview.com, also with us today. As we come back to the 2020 presidential elections, an election that really will make the difference for the future of the American Republic. And we are seeing the slow but steady decline of Western civilization and the breakdown of the American Republic. And we've been watching this for quite some time. But this election appears to be about as controversial as the elections that appeared during the period of the Civil War. This one, very close, very, very close as elections were back during the Civil War, as Democrats were trying to come back directly after the Civil War. The nation was extremely divided and elections were very close. Rutherford Hayes in 1876 won with a minority of votes, 47.9% against his opponent's 50.7%. And George W. Bush would be number two in the closest race in American history. It would have been 47.9 for George W. Bush against Al Gore's 48.4. You remember the Chads? Everybody was concerned about the Chads in the 2000 elections. Were these Chads completely removed? And does that constitute a vote or does that not constitute a vote? They were down to that level of precision in the 2000 elections between Bush and Gore. Well, now we're looking at a 50.4 to 47.9% split with something like 90X% of the vote in. That's the national popular vote, 47.9% for Trump, 50.4% for Biden. And that is almost as narrow as the Rutherford Hayes election vote of 1876. Friends, that's very close, extremely close. And of course, we're looking at this president, if he wins, that is, if Donald Trump wins the reelection, he will be the least popular president by popular vote in American history, except for Rutherford Hayes, perhaps, and John Quincy Adams, where the race was a four-way race and it was just a little different than what we're dealing with in this two-way race. So that's where things are right now. Doesn't look like we're going to have an answer for this election until past the weekend, Adam, at this point.
The level of corruption is disconcerting. The fact that everywhere we turn, we're seeing problems. Pennsylvania, for example, Corey Lewandowski with the Trump campaign was given a Philadelphia court order Thursday morning that poll watchers were allowed to be within 6 feet of ballot counting at the Pennsylvania Convention Center rather than the previous 20-foot perimeter. He had that court order in hand by 10:30 a.m. Thursday, was told by the Philadelphia counting folks, nope, nope, you're not allowed to do that, and he has it all on video. They are refusing to honor the judge's order, giving them access, and it flies, says Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager for President Trump, flies in the face of democracy. Then we have over in Nevada corruption. Jill Stoke, S-T-O-K-K-E, went to go vote, and when she showed up, she was told that someone had already cast a ballot in her name. Adam Laxalt, former Nevada Attorney General, said that people were getting as many as 18 ballots sent to their homes. So not only is this a problem with the universal model of sending everyone a ballot, as opposed to the previous notion of requesting a ballot if you wanted one, an absentee ballot, not only is everyone getting a ballot, some people are getting 18 ballots. What does that mean? Does that mean you can fill out all 18 and submit it? I mean, what would that do to the vote? Then we had this story, which we featured on the World View in 5 minutes just this Thursday, indicating that a Postal Service mailman was told by his supervisor in Detroit to take the ballots that had come in November 4th, separate them, put them in express mail bags, and then hand stamp them as if they had come in on November 3rd. Now, you need to know that in Michigan, the law establishes that the vote casting deadline is 8 p.m. Election Day, November 3rd. So it was completely illegal for the U.S. Postal Service supervisor, Jonathan Clark is his name, no relation to the gentleman that writes our newscast twice a week, It was completely illegal for that supervisor to instruct his employees to count those November 4th mail-in votes and present them as if they had been sent on November 3rd. All of this has come out, thankfully, through James O'Keefe of Project Veritas. You can go to theworldview.com for Thursday's newscast and look at the actual video. He's had more videos come out subsequently. You can Google Project Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, and look at other documentation of other mail workers who are saying they're not going to cheat. They believe that the election should be one that is all about integrity, and they don't want to have dirty hands, and they are coming clean, blowing the whistle on their supervisors who've been telling them to cheat. And one other quick story I think is fascinating. In Maricopa County, Kevin, the Trump supporters were outside the elections office where the counting was ongoing. As we know, 500,000 votes were outstanding in Arizona, 250,000 of them in Maricopa County, most of them likely Trump voters, hoping that the Arizona state will switch those 11 electoral votes. The people were praying. They were just praying outside that God's will would be done and, yes, that President Trump would win this election. By the way, the initial photo caption from Arizona Daily Star, very straight to the point. Quote, supporters of President Donald Trump pause for prayer during a rally outside the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, end quote. But MSNBC chose to portray the group, just a bunch of nice, probably Christian Republican voters who want to pray, portray the group as a threat to both democracy and the vote counters inside the building, calling them irrational, threatening. Even primetime host Chris Cuomo of CNN denounced the group of people praying outside, quote, very often angry, irrational, and not doing their part to, quote, make America great again. And when he tossed it to his correspondent inside the elections building, the correspondent said, there's a lot of drama here. There's protesters outside. Well, they weren't protesters. They were voters who were praying for the president, praying for the election, and saying that, quote, something that the people counting have to worry about when they go home, end quote, as if somehow there's a threat of violence to the people who are doing the counting when all the Christian voters were doing was praying. So a lot of interesting things going on in the country, and we need to be aware of it, and we need to pray through it.
Well, this is an extremely unusual circumstance in the history of this country. We have extenuating circumstances for this particular election, aggravations to the stability of the nation going into this election. And I think everybody's quite aware of the stakes involved. On the one hand, you've got a socialist candidate, a totalitarian communist of sorts, against somebody who has advocated more freedom and somebody who's, you know, advocating persecution of Christians, the equality bill on the one side, the other side is a president that advocates pro-life Supreme Court justice. I mean, you couldn't have more polarized candidates going into this election. And the election is the closest in history, with maybe the exception of the Rutherford Hayes election in 1876. So election is closest than anything in history. Everybody's aware of the stakes involved. There's division unlike anything we've seen in the history of this country going into the election. The riots on the streets, according to my calculations, were the worst ever since the Civil War. Also, the media has been particularly incensed against the incumbent. Some 98% of the media, I don't think that's an exaggeration. I'd say at least 98% of the mainstream media has been opposed to the incumbent for the last 4 years. So all of that put together has created an incendiary situation for this election. Friends, we're going to talk more about the potential of the president winning this election next on the Generations broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, Adam McManus with me.
Ever since the creation of the Garden of Eden, Satan has been working his hardest to erase the knowledge of God and seduce the creatures made in God's image to think that they are the center of the universe. One look at today's society and you see his progress. Humanistic thought has inundated our culture, and we can trace its roots directly back to the classroom and the textbooks we're setting in front of our kids. That's why every Christian homeschool parent should have a curriculum that's not only rock solid academically, but most importantly will point students back to their Creator as the source of all wisdom and knowledge, and to Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. If you've been struggling to find such a curriculum, look no further. Here at Generations, we've spent over 15 years developing our Christian discipleship curriculum to help Christian homeschool parents like you pass on the faith to your children by teaching a God-centered view of life and integrating the Bible into every lesson. Our goal is to not only help you meet your students' academic needs, but also to assist you in discipling your children for generations to come. So get started today with our Christian discipleship curriculum and watch your children marvel, learn, and mature as they embark on a God-focused learning adventure to discover more about the world around them and the one who made it all. You can learn more about our curriculum resources and pick up our newly released fifth grade curriculum pack today at generations.org/curriculum. That's generations.org/curriculum.
Back on the Generations broadcast, Kevin Swanson with you, friends, and we are looking at the results of the 2020 elections. Indeed, the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. And yes, the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord, as is the Democratic voting base in the hand of the Lord. And as the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he wills. And we have noted that public opinion can sway quickly from one direction to the next. But now we're trying to determine, what is God doing? These are indeed the works of God, as they are the works of men. And we are seeing the direction that God is taking with this election. We're trying to determine what is happening, this being one of the closest elections in American history. Well, friends, Maricopa County in Arizona seems to be the swing county for the entire country this time around. Nevada being at this point in Biden's pocket. We'll see how that works out over the next few days. And Maricopa County in Arizona is the determining factor for Arizona. It's the largest county, including Phoenix, Scottsdale, and other parts of the metropolitan area surrounding Phoenix. If Maricopa County goes to Biden, Arizona goes to Biden. That's the way it plays out. And it does appear that Maricopa County has been moving left, it's been moving Democrat, been moving blue for, well, the last 6 years. If you go all the way back to 2008, the Republican had a 10% margin in the election, the 2008 election, as they did in the 2012 election. The margin was closer to 11%. Then 2014, the margin was 15% in favor of Republican in Maricopa County in the 2014 election. On to the 2016 election, where Donald Trump was able to gain a 3% margin on the Democrat, that is Hillary Clinton, in the 2016 election. So there you've got a 3%. You can see how things have changed dramatically just between 2014 and 2016. Then in 2018, 2 years ago, in the Senate race, the Democrat had the 4% edge, which means in the 2020 election, that is this election, this time around, it could be that the Democrat is sustaining the 4% edge over the Republican, that is the incumbent President Donald Trump. Well, that's Maricopa County. We're not going to know the winner for sure for a long time, is my guess. Nobody's calling it for now. The winner may not be picked until Monday or Tuesday of next week, and that doesn't count the 30 to 40 lawsuits flying around at this point. Much of this will be settled in the courts.
That's right.
Adam, I'm guessing this is going to be settled in the courts. So we'll see what happens.
The Trump campaign is now suing three states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, over the counting and handling of late arriving ballots, and it has requested a recount in Wisconsin. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who won his election, even though he was outspent by tens of millions of dollars, said something about why it's not a big deal that we're going to court. In fact, we've often gone to court over election outcomes. If it's a close election and there's possible shenanigans going on, we need to make sure that only the legal votes are counted and the illegal votes are dispensed with and thrown in file 13, right?
Yeah, and all that to say that this may take a while to work out in the courts, at which point America will be in an unstable condition. I guess no new deal there. We've been going through a period of instability for now at least a year. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, and here's the other thing about the courts is Gorsuch, Roberts, not so much on the president's side. Even Justice Kavanaugh joined Gorsuch to rule against Trump in the landmark cases about the president's taxes and financial records. I think that came down in August, if I'm not mistaken. And then this summer, Chief Justice John Roberts rejected President Trump's claims of immunity from grand jury and congressional subpoenas. He cast the deciding fifth vote, as he did when preventing Trump from ending the program that concurrently protects the so-called Dreamers from deportation. So, you know, Roberts, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, maybe not so much jumping into some of these election shenanigans. We will see how all this plays out over the next few weeks. Could be the next few months.
It could be. And one thing's for sure, we touched on it yesterday, and that is that the minority vote has just skyrocketed for President Donald Trump, and I think he's to be commended. Richard Land, the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, said, divisive identity politics lost big time after an explosion of so-called wokeness and a ceaseless campaign to paint President Trump as a quote-unquote white supremacist. Non-white voter support for Trump and Republicans went up nationwide from 8% in the 2016 election to 12% this time for blacks, and from 28% in 2016 among Hispanics to 32% among Hispanics this election. And he says, demographically, Florida is really America's ethnic future, a mix of non-Hispanic whites, Hispanics, blacks, other minorities. And he did beautifully in Florida, actually closing the gap between him and the Democrat opponent, now 7 points narrower against Biden than against Hillary Clinton.
As we pointed out yesterday, Trump did really well with the minority vote and the blue collar vote. Now, that switched since 1994. I'm going to say about 1994, Republicans were capturing the college vote, but that 55-40 shift went to 40-55. That is, Republicans are doing much better with the blue collar vote than the white collar vote, probably because these blue collar people are staying out of the indoctrination centers. They're not going to college, praise God. And, you know, they're still somewhat protected from this horrible socialist indoctrination program that some people call the university.
That is a great point.
Okay. Well, friends, wow. Here we go. But before we're done with this segment of the program, I think most of us are bracing ourselves for a Biden win. Right now, it's hard to say. Right now, by the way, the bookies are putting it 90% on Biden. So that's what the bookies are saying. We'll see. We'll see what happens in Pennsylvania. We'll see what happens in Arizona, Maricopa County. That, to me, is going to be a key county for whether or not Trump is going to make it in the 2020 election. But friends, prepare for a Biden win. What does this mean? Now, brace yourself. That's what I'm saying. Brace yourself. The top agenda issues for Biden will be full-fledged abortion funding. He says we're getting away from all of this banning of abortion funding on the federal level. We are going to fund abortion, not just abortifacients, not just contraceptives. We're going for full-fledged abortion funding. I think we need to brace ourselves for billions of federal dollars put into abortuaries, not just contraceptives, but into abortion across this country. That's Biden's priority. And also, don't forget that Biden is going after Christian persecution. That's huge. He says his number one priority is the Equality Act.
The badly named
Equality
Act.
Going into this. Now, for those of you who think, the Equality Act, we'll talk about it in just a moment. It's not the Equality Act. But if you think that somehow the 51 votes we have in the Senate, we may get in the Senate, looks to me like Republicans might have a 51 edge on the Senate vote. But do remember that the chairman of the Senate, that's the VP, can make or break a tie. So keep that in mind as well. But remember, there is a Republican, Susan Collins, Senator Collins from Maine has already signed on as a sponsor of the Quality Act. So there goes your Senate majority, plus the chair who can make or break the tie. So, friends, you're not safe. The point is you're not safe on the Quality Act.
Liberty Counsel rightly said this is a wrongly named bill. It's actually the most extreme threat to religious freedom, free speech, privacy, and to women's rights that has ever been proposed by Congress. It's going to be a wrecking ball to churches, religious organizations, religious freedom, and free speech. Yeah. Who do you think would be the first to be hit by the wrecking ball of the Equality Act should it pass muster?
Well, obviously, any kind of Christian-owned accommodation business, certainly the bakers, the photographers, and the candlestick makers for weddings. But even beyond that, the hotels, the rental industries, you're going to get on into the schools, the colleges, Christian schools, Christian universities. These guys are going to be swept up into this Equality Act. You're looking at the islands of freedom. The islands of culture are going to have to be pretty much fortified by families homeschooling, by churches choosing not to do Christian schools, but encouraging their families to homeschool, a massively decentralized form of education. That's the only possibility for survival. Now, I'm not saying that we as Christians are all going to be in prison. We're going to be massively inconvenienced for sure. In fact, one of the repercussions of this Equality Act for the average Christian ministry is we're not going to be invited to hotels. We're not going to be able to hold conferences in hotels. Conservative Christian organizations that take a stance against, say, abortion or homosexuality or transgendering, they're going to be barred from hotels. I'd say you're going to be stuck in small churches if you want to do conferences. These are the sorts of ways in which freedom of speech will be curtailed. Here's the New American speaking to the Equality Act. Number of analysts have warned that by enshrining sexual orientation in the statute, even pedophilia could be protected. In the House of Representatives, Democrats already have more than enough co-sponsors to pass the bill, Susan Collins as well. And in the Senate, they're getting very close, but a massive coalition of critics from across the political spectrum, a broad array of religious traditions, is rising up to stop it. Well, it's not really happening, friends, as is obvious from the 2020 elections. But the so-called Equality Act, also known as H.R. 5 in the House, S. 788 in the Senate, purports to prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, gender, identity, and sexual orientation. To do that, it would enshrine actual or perceived sexual orientation, gender, identity into federal statutes that would give homosexuality, transgenderism, more perversions of human sexuality and gender the same protections as race or sex and employment, housing, public accommodations, and more. Incredibly, the legislation specifically states the religious freedom may not be used as a defense under the bill. So even the bill itself says, hey, you're not going to be able to poll a religious liberty amendment, First Amendment argument in a federal court to protect your liberties. It applies to churches, religious schools, religious hospitals, religious employers, gathering places, sports, all government entities, and more. Christian adoption agencies will be shut down if they refuse to place children with homosexuals. Churches, synagogues, mosques will no longer be able to hold marriage between men and women or any moral standards on sexuality at all. While this does not directly indicate that churches would be forced to accommodate same-sex weddings, the language is vague enough in specifying public accommodations at any establishment to make the concern an issue. And I can go on. Counselors of faith will be banned from helping people with unwanted same-sex attractions. Under the measure, everyone will have to affirm the LGBT agenda or face persecution, destruction at the hands of the federal government. Churches will lose their tax-exempt status if they do not submit. The gender madness is breathtaking. Under the legislation, virtually everywhere across the United States, men who claim they identify as women will be allowed to use women's restrooms, showers, changing areas, even bunk with women on trips, including church trips. This is already happening in government schools and some radical businesses as well. But you can count on this being forced on Christian schools, Christian colleges, and so forth and so on. And now we're not just talking about those Christian colleges and universities that receive government funding. We're talking about Christian colleges and universities who are standing up for Christian principle and yet will not accommodate transgenderism or homosexual activity up on the campus. So, friends, this is where we're headed. Accommodation businesses like hotels, as I said, are not going to allow Christian conferences where Christian organizations who are sponsoring the conferences will take a position against homosexuality. That will be one of the repercussions from this Equality Act 2021.
The odd thing about it all is that those on the left keep talking about the importance of tolerance. Tolerance once meant that let's just all get along. You have a different opinion than I do. Now it means we who are conservative or Christian, Bible-believing folks now have to endorse what we know the Bible describes as an abomination. So there's no tolerance for Christians. There's no tolerance for a biblical perspective or someone's deeply held religious convictions who does not want to participate as a photographer or a baker, for example, in a homosexual faux wedding ceremony. Now it's, as you said, the Equality Act is much more all-encompassing, and it impacts all these things, from churches not being able to uphold marriage between a man and a woman and Christian adoption agencies and that long list that you cited. It's very invasive, and this is what we have to contend with if Joe Biden is indeed confirmed as president. God forbid that outcome.
Brace yourself for Biden, my friends. Brace yourself for Biden. You can expect Gramsci and shaming for those who will not comply and continue to speak against homosexuality and refuse to transgender their church bathrooms for transgenders in every community around America. You can bet on the fact that even if you're not arrested, even if you are homeschooling your kids and your church takes a stand against the homosexuality and the transgenderism of the day, you will be subject to Gramscian shaming in your community. It's just going to happen. This is the way it works in this new system in which Christians will be shamed. Socialism, Marxism, transgenderism, homosexuality is the name of the game. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, the people groan. It's Proverbs 29 and verse 2. And this, my friends, will be our experience under Joe Biden. Proverbs 28:12 as well. When the righteous rejoice, there is great glory. But when the wicked arise, men hide themselves. In Proverbs 17:15, he who justifies the wicked, he who justifies homosexuality, he who justifies Planned Parenthood, he who justifies the killing of innocent children, he who justifies the wicked, and he who condemns the just, both of them are alike an abomination to the Lord. Well, under Joe Biden, what can we expect? More tyranny, more masks, more unrest, more abortion funding, more persecution of Christians. Certainly those involved in the accommodation industries, those who hire and fire, those who are attempting to keep a Christian school, a Christian college going, and some churches will be affected by this Equality Act. But we'll have to find a way through it. Friends, people have been persecuted for their faith since day one. And there are people who are persecuted for their faith in hundreds of nations throughout the history of the world. And certainly we will not be exempted from that. But do remember that God protected his people through Obama, through the Obama administration. God expanded the island of freedom during the Obama administration with the Obamacare Act, in which Christian medical sharing ministries were exempted. Yes. You remember that. And you remember that that immunizations for homeschoolers have been exempted. Homeschoolers have been exempted in some of those more onerous bills in the state of Colorado, which is a very blue state, over the last 20 years or so. We have been exempted from so many requirements, sex ed requirements, et cetera, by homeschooling our kids. We have something of an island of freedom that has been protected and provided for. Remember that God is over all. Just remember that where we sign up for responsibilities and we raise our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord has come alongside us and provided us with the freedoms, the liberties, the rights to continue to engage those responsibilities as parents. So we have seen God's mercy upon the remnant. We have seen God providing freedom for those who continue to fortify the islands of freedom, the islands of culture. While the world is destroying itself, while the world is transgendering their six-year-olds and indoctrinating their eight-year-olds in homosexuality, and thereby committing suicide, committing cultural suicide, and using the federal government to do it. While the federal government is paying to kill hundreds of millions of babies through contraceptive abortifacients and abortion funding. We are not killing our kids. We are loving our children. We will not use the abortifacients, so we'll raise our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And we're having children too. And they're not. So they kill their children and use government funds to do so. And they then transgender the rest of them and indoctrinate them in a form of sexual anarchy or sexual suicide, and thereby obliterate their own communities and obliterate their social systems, their civilizations. And so we can protect, we can preserve, by God's grace, our own children, our own families, our own church communities, by the grace of God. Do you remember that Jesus is over all things to the church? I want to encourage you all to remember that Jesus is over all things to the church, even as the tyrants come in and commit social harry-carry, which is what's happening now.
I've never heard of that term before, social harry-carry. Leave it to Kevin Swanson to come up with that one. I love it. Well, I think about Matthew 5, about his call for us to be the salt of the earth, because we do see a culture that is rotting. If we as believers retain our saltiness, we can help preserve a culture that is in keeping with our Christian heritage, founded to be a city on a hill.
And friends, that's what we need to be. And I think the first step, though, Adam, is that we need to resaltify the salt. You know, the salt has lost too much of its savor. So let's resaltify the salt by discipling our own people, our own families. Let's be sure that we are salt before we attempt to be salt for the earth. So I think that's the takeaway on this edition of the Generations broadcast. Friends, you can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. Again, I encourage you to America in God's Providence, our 1,000-page, 500-year history of God's providential hand upon a nation where he poured out his mercies and sometimes his judgments upon a nation. Read the story all the way from Columbus to Trump. It's all in America in God's Providence, available at our website, generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson, and we welcome you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.